Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A look at how a second Trump presidency could affect public transit, construction, diversity programs, and more. Plus, local reaction to the president-elect's health department cabinet picks and what it could mean for Illinois.
I don't believe taking a face and trying to change it. I'd like taking a face and enhancing it.
And makeup guru Bobbi Brown on her newest company, Jones Road Beauty. And now to some of today's top stories. Special Counsel Jack Smith is moving to dismiss all federal charges against President-elect Donald Trump. Smith filed the motions today to drop the election interference and classified documents cases against Trump. In the court filing, Smith wrote, quote, "This outcome is not based on the merits or strength of the case against the defendant." Trump celebrated the move today on Truth Social, saying in part, quote, "These cases, like all of the other cases I've been forced to go through, are empty and lawless and should never have been brought. Over $100 million of taxpayer dollars has been wasted in the Democrat Party's fight against their political opponent, me." Trump has said he would fire Smith once he retook the office, a move at odds with how previous presidents have handled special counsels. Smith dropped the cases without prejudice, leaving the door open for charges to be brought again in the future. The Chicago mayor's office says it will keep 162 vacant positions in the Chicago Police Department after all. The move comes after multiple agencies criticized plans to eliminate the positions in next year's budget. The city made the announcement just hours after the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability expressed the same concerns as both the federally appointed independent monitor overseeing the consent decree and the Illinois Attorney General. Critics say the proposed cuts of both civilian and sworn positions were concentrated in units that would work directly on reform that is required by the consent decree. The mayor's office says it plans to propose a budget amendment to restore those positions to the budget. The Chicago Bears stadium saga takes a new turn today. Team officials are announcing they've reached a tentative agreement on a property tax deal with the Village of Arlington Heights, according to multiple reports. The Bears purchased the 326-acre plot that was the former site of the Arlington International Racecourse last year, but faced roadblocks. The tentative deal now opens the possibility of the team landing in the northwest suburb. But multiple reports say the team is still focused on Chicago as the landing spot for the new stadium, though. The team also proposed a new domed stadium just south of Soldier Field on the lakefront, and they're also reconsidering the former Michael Reese Hospital site in Bronzeville. The late Chicago Mayor Harold Washington was honored this morning at a wreath-laying ceremony at the city's Oakwood Cemetery, where the historic figure was laid to rest 37 years ago today.
Through our civic choices, we have all been blessed to know, follow, respect, work, and most importantly, to vote for our Mayor Harold Washington. And today we lift up his life, his legacy, and memory.
The Mayor Harold Washington Legacy Committee hosts the annual We Remember Harold event each year in an effort to keep the memory and message of Chicago's first black mayor alive. And Mayor Washington was also honored last Friday by the Illinois Labor History Society with an award for his advocacy in union and human rights, which the committee accepted on his behalf. Up next, local public transit advocates gear up for another Trump term. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Local leaders are scrambling to figure out how a second Trump presidency could affect Chicago and Illinois. Mass deportations and massive cuts in federal spending are top of mind for many, but there's another key area, how residents get around day in and day out, in particular on public transit. Our Nick Blumberg has been looking into this and joins us now with more. Nick.
Well, Brandis, let's start with the big ticket item that's on a lot of people's minds. That is, of course, the Red Line extension that is set to finally bring a CTA rail line all the way to the south, far south side of the Chicago, past its current endpoint at 95th Street. Now, that's a 5.6-mile addition. It's relying on $1.9 billion, billion with a B, in federal funding. The hope is construction will start next year sometime. Right now, the CTA and their federal counterparts are hurrying to get the final approvals done and an agreement in place before President Biden leaves office in January. CTA officials say they're in the final phases of locking down the grant money, and they're confident it'll happen. Now, it's an interesting coincidence. Final approval for federal funding of that massive red-purple modernization program that's going on the north side right now, that came through, as it happens, at the very end of the Obama administration. Despite Trump taking office, there have not been any problems with the promised federal money coming through on schedule, so transit officials are pretty confident that'll be the case here, despite big promises to slash government spending.
Nick, could some of those big cuts affect future transit projects?
Well, it's certainly possible. During the last Trump administration, there was a push for the U.S. Transportation Department to get rid of the infrastructure grant program that funds things like the Red Line extension, like the red-purple overhaul. Now, a former Transportation Department official wrote in the transit section of the controversial Project 2025 document that the grants are, quote, another example of Washington's tendency to fund transit expansion rather than maintaining or improving current facilities. Because Americans have demonstrated a strong preference for alternative means of transportation rather than throwing good money after bad by continuing federal subsidies for transit expansion, there should be a focus on reducing costs that make transit uneconomical. While Trump tried to distance himself from Project 2025 during the campaign, he's now appointed numerous people who contributed to it to government posts. But Brandis, even with opposition to the grant program from some conservatives, it's had bipartisan support on Capitol Hill for the kinds of reasons you can imagine. It creates jobs and improves local infrastructure in lawmakers' districts or home states. There's also some money available through the bipartisan infrastructure law, though that's only through 2026.
So besides funding, what else are transit leaders concerned about?
Well, even if funding doesn't go away entirely, the administration could make some quiet changes that end up having a big impact. For example, altering eligibility requirements for certain programs without much fanfare, leaving important jobs unfilled and gumming up the works that way, making choices based on political calculations. There's also the question of diversity programs, which the CTA has made a centerpiece of its big infrastructure projects. There's a federal effort to help more women and people of color benefit from big money transportation contracts. It's currently being challenged in court, and it's the exact kind of program that a Trump administration is highly unlikely to fight for. If the program goes away, that'll put the onus on state and local governments to step up.
Okay, a lot of questions about the future, of course. It's not written yet.
We'll be watching.
We'll be watching. Nick Blumberg, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And you can read Nick's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Up next, we explore how a second Trump term could impact another area of everyday life, public health. Many of President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks are raising eyebrows. He recently nominated environmental lawyer and anti-vaccine organizer Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, and controversial television talk show host Dr. Mehmet Oz as head of Medicare and Medicaid, neither of whom have public health experience. Joining us now with more on the potential impact on public health is Dr. Robert Murphy, professor of infectious diseases and executive director of the Institute for Global Health at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Murphy, thanks for joining us again. Welcome back.
Thank you for inviting me.
So what was your reaction to President Trump's selection of RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., to lead this department?
Well, it's really, I'm horrified because this is a person who is completely incompetent in this area. He's a vaccine denier. He's stated it publicly. He says he's walked it back a little bit. I guess it's a little bit too much for people to absorb right now. But this is a person with no public health background, no real vaccine knowledge, who is going to be running one of the biggest departments in the United States, the Department of Health and Human Services. People don't realize how much is encompassed here. The NIH, the CDC, the FDA, all that and more is under this person's purview. It's an incredibly important post, and this person is completely unqualified.
You mentioned CDC and FDA, so let's look at some of his other choices for other agencies. Got Dr. Dave Weldon as the nominee for CDC, for Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Jeanette Neshawat for Surgeon General. Dr. Marty McCary for Food and Drug Administration. Dr. Mehmet Oz for Medicare and Medicaid. And Dr. Jay Bhattacharya for NIH, National Institutes of Health. What are your thoughts, concerns with some of these picks?
It's a mixed bag. First of all, Dave Weldon, who is a physician, was in Congress for, I think, 12 years, is a firm believer that there are ingredients in vaccines that cause autism. He was a founding member of the Congressional Autism Caucus. This has been disproven time and time again. This is a completely non-scientific. So here's a person with a little knowledge who has really gone off the plank. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and he's going to be in charge of the Centers for Disease Control, which a lot of it has to do with recommending vaccines. Some of the other choices actually are pretty solid. Dr. McCary, for head of the FDA, surgeon at Johns Hopkins with a master's in public health from the Harvard School of Public Health, who's also a member of the National Academy of Medicine, a very respectable person, and I think he's pretty solid.
Let's talk about him for just a minute, because Dr. Marty McCary, he has decried the overprescribing of drugs, the use of pesticides in foods, undue influence of pharmaceutical and insurance companies over doctors and government regulators. So some of that sounds fairly mainstream, reasonable. You say it's a mixed bag, so it sounds like some of these nominees you think could be suited for the job.
I think they could, and I think he's one of the ones that is probably going to go forward. You know, having this kind of institutional change, change at the top and change in direction, this is normal. This is normal evolution of these gigantic departments. I think this would be a healthy change with him in charge of the FDA.
Okay, but obviously it sounds like you've got some concerns potentially about a couple of the others, Dr. Neshawat,
I have Dr. Oz. I have a little problem with who he reports to. He's going to be reporting to JFK, to RFK Jr., who doesn't know what he's talking about. Some of the other, the CDC, Dr. Weldon, is another person who is really an extremist.
Okay. Some of these appointees, as you've mentioned, as we've discussed, are either anti-vaxxers or required vaccine programs.
Right.
What could a change in vaccine requirements mean for schools?
Well, where all this is going is a relaxation in the requirements for vaccination in public facilities like schools, nursing homes, hospitals, etc. And if that vaccine mandate that exists today for, like, say, for example, measles, if that drops below 90% or even below 95%, I hate to say it, you're going to start seeing measles outbreaks. And why is that important? Because measles can kill children. It can kill adults who aren't vaccinated. It can kill anyone who's not vaccinated. And RFK Jr. should know this because he was involved in the crisis in Samoa years ago where he convinced the president of that country to eliminate the mandate for measles vaccine. And they had a big jump in cases, and 90 children died. And we can see the same thing here if these vaccine uptake drops like it did in Samoa.
All RFK Jr. has also said that he would pause drug development and infectious disease research. A lot of that is funded out of the National Institutes of Health in favor of focusing on chronic diseases. What impact would that have on research and at, you know, the universities that conduct a lot of that research?
Well, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, where this falls into, is about an $8 billion a year enterprise of the almost $50 billion that the NIH has. It's a huge investment in research. What's happening now with drug resistance and the bacteria, with new pathogens that are emerging or reemerging, is critically important. Look what happened in 2020. I mean, with COVID. I mean, you think we're not going to have another infectious pandemic to put all the infectious interests to the side? This is insanity. I mean, don't we learn anything from our mistakes? It was tough enough getting through the COVID pandemic. What if avian flu becomes transmissible human to human, which is a huge fear and certainly a possibility that could happen now? Is this group going to be able to run it? I mean, RFK is saying is let's not look at infections anymore. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Dr. Murphy, how does public health leadership at the national level affect public health outcomes at the state and local level?
Well, there is no national mandate. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that public health is a U.S. constitutional issue. That has always been delegated to the states. So we have 50 states. We have six territories that have people in them, including Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia and others. And everyone has their own. Illinois here, we actually have three. We have the city of Chicago, we have Cook County, and we have the state of Illinois. Fortunately, they're all working together, and things are working just swell. But every state is different. And when these infections roll into a population, you can't have, when you're one state doing one thing, another jurisdiction doing another thing. I mean, that is really not going to be the wisest thing in many situations. You know, it's really just a matter of time before there's another epidemic or pandemic that comes along. We have to be ready for it. And this group is not the group that could run it.
Okay. We'll have to leave it there. My thanks to Dr. Robert Murphy for joining us with your insight. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Up next, beauty mogul Bobby Brown talks cosmetics and aging. But first, a look at the weather. Bobby Brown has launched not one, but $2 billion beauty brands. The makeup maven has been a household name since the 90s. And now at 67, she's given her own business a makeover with the brand Jones Road Beauty, ringing in its fourth anniversary this year. And Chicagoland native and beauty mogul Bobby Brown joins us now. Welcome. It's good to have you on Chicago Tonight.
I'm so happy to be here.
Likewise. So we know that you have created a legacy in the beauty industry, one that appeals to women of varying backgrounds and ages. Why would you say, or why do you think diversity has been such an important part of what you do?
Because it's what our world is, right? It's what our world is. It was always important to me, no matter what your age, no matter what your skin color, that when you came to look at any makeup that I created, we had colors for you. It's not a trend. It's not a fad. It's just the way it has to be. And common sense,
right? That's something I feel like women of color especially, you know, often say that they've struggled with. Mm. And I had a friend, a producer, who told me, you know, for the longest time, she thought Bobby Brown was a black-owned business just because they had so many colors available to women of color. You know, her moms and aunts all used Bobby Brown. And so it seems like you said, that's just something that it just makes good sense to offer that. But not every company thought that way.
No, but it didn't matter. I mean, I don't do things because I think they're going to sell. I do things because it's the right thing to do.
Which is a good rule to live by. Yeah. You founded, as we said, Bobby Brown Cosmetics about 3 decades ago, a little more then. And then, of course, Jones Road Beauty 4 years ago after leaving Bobby Brown back in, you said, 2017?
2016, I think.
2016-ish.
Yeah.
How would you say the Jones Road customer of today is maybe different from the Bobby Brown customer years ago?
Well, I think the Jones Road customer is certainly educated, is cooler, is kind of just really knows what's going on out there and are people that want to just look better. You know, they're not looking to be made up. They're just looking to feel great and to look great. I'm not saying it's a more natural look, but it kind of is. You know, that's really how women are wearing makeup these days. They're not, you know, they're not overdoing it the way women did in the 90s.
And that's also, but it's sort of been your, sort of your approach, your aesthetic for most of your career, sort of calling yourself a beauty enhancer versus, mm-hmm. you know, a makeup artist who puts on tons and tons.
Right. I don't believe taking a face and trying to change it. I like taking a face and enhancing it. I'm someone that doesn't like contouring. I don't think anyone needs to contour their face. They just need to use makeup to bring out special things on their skin.
How do you think the makeup industry, the beauty industry, has changed over the years?
Well, it's grown immensely because besides all the, you know, the brands that have been around forever in the department stores, now there's brands that you can get at Anthropology, you know, direct to consumer, freestanding stores. There's so much. When I was in the traditional marketplace, they were just the department store makeups, and now it's exploded, and a lot of people are makeup artists who have, and they all have brands.
Some are pros, some are amateurs. You know, some are on social media. You right. yourself have taken to social media. How do you think that social media has impacted the industry?
Well, I think it certainly brings this big giant world together, smaller. So, you know, the great thing about social media is it really doesn't cost anything, or it doesn't have to cost anything. You can get your message out there. You can show people what you're about, either by words or by pictures. And it just, you know, it makes your community, hopefully, a very dedicated community, which is great.
There are also some influencers, though, who have, you know, sort of a million different products to create a look and a million different steps. And then, you know, there's the response to that is, oh, I tried to make that look that, you know, this beauty influencer recommended, and I look like a clown.
Well, I think there's some people that have a really dedicated following that people trust them. And there's others that are constantly posting, you know, everyone's, and you don't know what to believe. So I tend to like my content creators to be people that truly love the brand.
You're also all about sort of clean beauty. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
It means that Jones Road is a totally clean line. It means that anyone that was starting a makeup line, you know, in 2020, you know, it has to be clean. I mean, people care about what the ingredients, what you're eating, what goes in your body. People care about, you know, different ingredients. I've always been part of a traditional makeup company, but because I was starting a brand in a different world, I wanted to see what was possible clean. And, you know, I love that Jones Road is totally clean. And what it means is there's 2,600 ingredients on the do not use on the banned site in the U.S., in Europe. And none of those are in the products, and that makes you a clean brand here.
The beauty industry typically has also not always been kind to women, older women particularly, and women are, you know, constantly seeking ways to look younger and mm-hmm. younger. There is Demi Moore's recent movie, The Substance, which mm-hmm. is, you know, about the horrors of aging or avoiding aging. What is your mantra on aging, and, you know, have we made progress in how we discuss and treat the process of aging?
Well, first of all, aging is great, right? Getting older is great. You get so many great things with it. You know, you get your power, you find your voice, you have all the knowledge, and you know what? So what? You have a few lines. And so what? You have things that you didn't have before. It doesn't matter. And my message to women is that always try to be the best version of yourself. And as we get older, it's more important to think about your body and what you put in your body and how you move your body than it is about, oh my God, this is changing, this is changing, this is changing. And you just want to be a healthier, better human. And it's just, remember, it's not about how you look, it's about how you feel you look. That's it, really important to look at yourself in good lighting, good mirrors, and yes, have makeup so you could put it on so you just look better, especially on those tired days.
I know we've got a little bit of product here and just a few seconds left. Yeah. If you wanted to tell folks, this is the thing that you need from Jones Road Beauty, or if you have a face, this is what you need. Maybe it's on this tray. Maybe it's one of the other products in your Bucktown store.
Well, if you have not tried the product, I would say go try one of the Miracle Balms. We called it Miracle Balm for a reason, because it's a skincare and a makeup in one. It could be a tint to the skin. It could be a blush. It could be a lipstick. And it's a moisturizer, so it's really up to you. And it will absolutely, when you have no makeup on, you put it on, you say, I just look so much better. So that's a good starting point.
It's like picking a child, isn't it?
Oh, I have three sons, and I every day I like a different one better, but I like them all the same.
It depends on how they're doing that day.
Yes.
All right, makeup maven, Bobby Brown, pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this. And that's our show for this Monday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and a special time, that's at 11 o'clock. The latest updates on Chicago's City Council with our Spotlight Politics team. And the co-hosts of America's Test Kitchen join us to talk about their new cookbook and helpful hacks for holiday meals, just in time in case you've got a holiday this week. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its 20 attorneys recognized in the 2025 edition of the Best Lawyers in America.